You know, the people we look to as sages, right? They all say the same thing in their own way.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, I went on that journey and I had intense success and whatever. And you know my name and you read my books and my church is whatever, right? But the ones who make it through that gauntlet, they get to a place where in their own way, every single one of them say, actually, like real life, real joy, real meaning, it was already there. I didn't have to do X, Y, and Z.
Welcome to the But I Tell You podcast. On today's episode, you get the treat of hearing from my friend, Jay Kim. Jay Kim is the lead pastor of Westgate Church, right in the heart of the Apple campus in Silicon Valley. He has written multiple books, including one on the book of Colossians, Analog Christian, Analog Church, and his most recent release, Listen, Listen, Speak. Jay embodies the very messages that he carries and is beautifully insightful. And I think you will be deeply encouraged about his journey to discover a more beautiful view of Jesus. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. If you enjoy, please subscribe, share with friends, and follow us on social media at But I Tell You Pod. Thanks again. Welcome to the But I Tell You podcast. I'm so grateful today to have my new friend, Jay Kim, on the podcast. Jay, how are you doing today?
Good, man. This is fun.
It is fun. We're both in Portland on site at the Practicing the Way conference.
Yeah.
And so long looked forward to the chance to get to hear a bit about your formation journey and the ways that you've discovered a more beautiful way of following Jesus and who he is.
Yeah.
So, I always love to start by asking folks, you know, what was something about your formation that, you know, you had heard it said? What was something that, you know, you had an idea of following Jesus looking a certain way that maybe has changed?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you sent me that question to just ponder and think about and all these different, you know, like so much of my journey, as is true for most people, has been a journey from something that I thought was just really entrenched and firm and permanent. And then God, by his spirit, very gently disentangling me from those things. And now I feel like at this season of my life, I've gotten acclimated to the fact that my formational journey is really a journey of discovery, which can be frightening on one hand. It's like, oh my gosh, that means I just don't know. I'm just going to constantly discover, you know, where I was wrong, where I was off and new things. But I've learned to really love that, you know, as I've sort of just entrusted that journey into God's loving hands. But yeah, lots of things came to mind. I think, you know, before we hit record, I was telling you, I think the first thing that came to mind for me, if I were to use kind of that language, the linguistic framework, I would say growing up, I heard it said that the journey of formation or discipleship to Jesus was about getting better, right? Getting better at being a Christian. And fill in the blank with however you want to define it. For me, it was like I grew up 90s evangelical youth culture. So it was like getting better meant listening to less Nirvana and whatever 90s Christian band version of Nirvana was. It meant like, you know, like thinking about girls less and thinking about God more, whatever, you know, all that stuff. It was like doing more Bible study, more quiet time, longer prayer. None of that's bad. I think that's really wonderful. But it also it got exhausting, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like, that's a very performative way to think about a life with God. So yeah, that's what I heard. I've heard it said that discipleship to Jesus is about getting better. It's about doing more, being more and whatnot. And I think over the years, I've heard Jesus gently say to me, I'm so grateful for this, you know, this whole idea that his yoke and his burden, it's light and easy. And it doesn't mean it's like nothing. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, non-participatory. Obviously we participate, but light and easy, I think I've begun to understand it as not so much about doing more or being more or getting better, but becoming more whole.
Yeah.
You know, living more aware of who I am and who I'm called to be, and truly, like literally a moment by moment sort of exercise in living deeply aware of what's happening in me, in my body, you know, in my heart, in my mind. I was talking to a friend earlier, you know, like you said, you and I are here in Portland at Bridgetown for the Practicing the Way, and there's like 800 people here, like high level, incredible. And I wrestle with some social anxiety. And so every time, I've been a pastor for 20 plus years. I've been in rooms like this, I don't know how many times. And every time my body starts reacting as I'm getting ready to go. And it's the whole like, oh my gosh, like people are going to size me up. And am I smart enough? Am I good? Have I accomplished enough? And I used to think like, well, maturity means I get better. Meaning I don't feel that way anymore.
Yeah, once I stop having that feeling.
Right, that's how I know I'm mature. Yeah. And what I'm learning is like, you know, yesterday when I pulled up, you know, for the meet and greet, I was like, my body felt exactly how it's felt in these types of rooms for 20 years.
Yes, noticing who might be the people who are
exactly
to be admired or to be connected with, or where do I fit in this social spectrum?
So I haven't gotten better, but I was aware.
Yeah.
Was like, oh, this thing is happening. And it's not real. Like, I'm a beloved son of God. That's true in this room, and it's true in the quiet places of my own life when I'm alone.
Wow.
And it's true in all the spaces in between. So I haven't gotten better. Like, it didn't feel better. It wasn't even necessarily easier for me to overcome my own anxiety, but I felt more aware and more present and more whole, you know? And For me, I think that's been really freeing. It's been liberating to know that I don't have to, like, you know, maturity does not mean things get easier. It just means I live with much deeper awareness of the delta between who I really am and what everything else in culture and my own body, my heart, my mind, and its sort of brokenness is telling me. So, that's been my journey. It's been really freeing.
Do you, we got to hear Dr. Todd Hall talk about emotions as like a dashboard on a car and how they prompt these different things. It reminded me, listening to you, this concept of like, you know, you become more aware, but how? You know, how did you become more aware? You know, instead of maybe you haven't gotten better in the sense that the lights don't come up on the dashboard, but you know, that's not how it actually works, but how did you come to that awareness? Like, how did you, you know, get a better view of how it's possible to still be aware, you know, or become aware?
Yeah, therapy.
Turns out. Welcome to the team.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, that's a microcosm. It wasn't just that. It was like, you know, great friends, like real friends who, you know, pastors are so lonely.
Yeah.
And so I've had just the great joy of being able to strike up some really meaningful friendships over the years that have been life-giving to me. I guess if I had to summarize it in a word, I think a deeper awareness was really born out of honesty, like a willingness to be honest with myself about myself.
Yeah.
A willingness to be really, truly honest with God. It's a weird thing, like the disconnect between our theological mind and sort of our embodied lived reality.
Yes.
And it was a number of years ago, actually through therapy and some spiritual direction and a few other sort of crisis moments in my life where I came to realize like, wow, I'm not only am I sort of not honest with the people around me, not only am I like not truly honest with myself about myself, I found myself like unintentionally trying to sort of put up a facade with God.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so interesting, like literally the beginning of the human story, you know, you go to Genesis 3 and I used to think, you know, like when the first humans hide in shame and then God speaks those words, like God's first utterance after sin enters the human story is not to cast blame or shame. It's to seek reconnection. He says, where are you? And, you know, you really think about it, he's God. It's not like he literally did not know where the humans
were. Yeah, where were they? Like,
right? Oh, it's like, it was a weird hide and seek game or something. It's like, you know, it's like a calling of love. Like, oh, something has been severed here. Mm. Like, you are no longer your whole self with me.
Yeah, you've gone into hiding. You're trying to create the chasm or something.
Right, and nobody asks where are you unless they're looking for you, unless they're seeking you. And if it is true that God is not seeking their physical proximity, like he knows where they are, if that's true, then he's seeking something else that has been lost. And that was a game changer for me. It's like, man, in these moments when I feel like I have to be a particular thing, be better.
Yeah.
I hear the loving, that loving question of desire and longing for reconnection. It's like, man, where are you?
Yeah.
Like, where are you? No, I don't want this thing, you know, that you're presenting to me. I want you. Where are you? And that too has been really freeing for me, that, yeah, that God wants me.
Man, I it reminds me, I had a spiritual direction call for the first time last summer during a sabbatical with this guy named Alan Fadling.
And oh, yeah. I love
I
Alan.
Was 10 days into my 3 months off and started to be like, am I productively resting enough?
Yeah.
Am I doing this,
yeah,
better?
So
am
funny.
I doing it better than I ought
productively
to?
Productively
like,
resting.
Yeah, am I doing this right? Like, am I yeah, doing it right? And
it's like frantically, yeah, eliminating hurry.
Exactly. No, that's honestly what it felt like. I was like, this is not, am I doing this right? Am I doing it better than you're supposed to do it?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And he said, you know, it's interesting that in the garden, you know, before he gave them any assignment, you know, before they were before they produced anything, you know, he said they were very good.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder in your own story, you know, what are the narratives that, whether it's, you know, your upbringing timeline that you said, like kind of the story in evangelicalism is be better or get better by not doing these things, you know, but what is, you know, that's presenting a certain narrative from a certain place. What do you think are those contributing factors that play into that, that make us think that we have to get better before he'll say, where are you?
Yeah.
Or before he'll seek us out.
Yeah.
You know, what are the things that you imagine contribute to our inability to put that thing down?
Yeah, man, so much. Such a wonderful question. We could probably talk for hours about
yeah,
it. Yeah, you know, like a couple of things come to mind right off the bat. And there's like none of this is going to be new to folks who are watching and listening, but a couple of things. One, we live like up and to the right is the cultural air we breathe.
Yeah.
Like if you're not progressing, you're dying. Mm-hmm. And
if you're not growing, you're dying. You're
yeah,
like,
exactly.
What about cancer?
Yeah, exactly, man.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Exactly. You know, and that's obviously infiltrated like the modern Western evangelical church too. You know,
yeah,
it's like, oh man, the big churches are the ones that get the platform and the stories and
yeah,
on and on. And I think even
better,
like,
so
yeah, say, even yeah, some of our sort of resonant mm-hmm, frequencies with each other and our friendship has been because we find ourselves in a tribe that is in the sort of early stages of hopefully responsibly and lovingly responding to that whole thing, which just feels so off and like not human, you know?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause actually healthy things do grow, but then healthy things die. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like that's just life. There's a plant right here, you know, in this mm-hmm, office, like it's a beautiful plant, but it has a life cycle and it will die.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. You know,
it'll actually put seeds in the ground, so to speak.
Right.
If it weren't in that pot, it would fall and then it would bring
exactly,
new life.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one. And then more specifically, I think in the digital age, you know, like social media is, it's funny, we call it a platform. It's literally a platform, like a stage from which we perform. And there's a lot of research to back this up now. It is rewiring us as humans to just live performatively. Like at all times,
yeah,
you know, like we are constantly on the search for what is postable, what's going to get the likes and the mm-hmm, shares and the whatever.
You have your normal self and then your better self,
right?
Which is that digital self,
right? And you live in that tension long enough, and you lose sense of which is which,
yeah,
you know, because we're not really intended. Humans are not meant to be multiple things. Like we're integrated beings. You're just one person,
yeah,
you know. And we live in an age where to be one thing is death. You know, you can't really be. You got to be whatever the algorithm needs you to be to be able to garner the sort of whatever interest or following that
yeah,
culture tells you you need to be, you know, whoever, someone of significance. So those are a couple of things that come to mind. But I think there's so much, man. We just,
yeah,
you know, we live in a world where performance is king and winning is everything. And I think we have to disentangle ourselves from that.
Yeah. You think about ways that people can experience that awareness you're talking about. I heard you mention, you know, listening to God.
Yeah.
You know, and these different things that, you know, might become native to you in your story, and they're things that are a part of your life, but maybe weren't at a certain point, you know. And I know how tempting it is to think like, okay, just add some Bible, just do this, just do
yeah,
that. But like what that deeper level sense of like, where are the places that you feel like you can put trying to be better down?
Like,
what are spaces and avenues and means for you to connect with God's grace in that way?
Yeah. I mean, the practice of paying attention has been game changing for
what
me.
What do you mean? Tell us about it.
I just, you know, my story is like many church leaders' stories. Even today, like as we're sitting here recording, we heard John Mark tell a story about, he was joking about it, but not joking. He was saying, you know, when he started out in ministry, however many years ago, he was like, yeah, I just wanted to be like an Orthodox Rob Bell with a big church, you know? Yeah. And the whole room laughed, like 800 people laughed. And I could tell, man, it was that awkward laugh of like, oh, that was me too, you know? And that's the microcosm of like that. I grew up with that too, you know? I just saw like, oh, I want to be the cool, relevant church leader that also garners like this massive following.
But with humility, of course.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. And I just felt like, and that's like one small bit of it. There's so much more. But for me, I felt like naturally I'm a pretty driven person. Like I'm constantly looking for everything. Wherever I am looks like point A. And if there is a point A, my mind tricks me into believing there must be a point B and a point Z.
Yep.
You know, like I just looked at life as point A.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is human beings, like we all live in the present. There is no other place where we can live. And even though God, El Olam, like eternal God, he's like beyond time and space. You know, I forget who it was that said it. Maybe John Ortberg. But like God only meets humans in one place. And that's now.
Right now.
Right. And over the years, what I've learned is if I constantly think of my life wherever I am as point A, my attention by nature is going to drift to point B.
Yeah.
And so that's what I had to do. I had to just and it's not like I don't set goals anymore. I mean, I have goals for my life, but I just hold them loosely and I try to offer them, you know, as an act of love to the Lord. Like God, this like, a dear friend of mine, a mentor of mine, he's from Texas, so he's got all these like little idioms, which are wonderful. He's told me over the years many times, like, listen, the Christian life is about praying hard and guessing.
Yeah.
You just pray hard and then you guess.
Yeah.
Which sounds reckless, but the way I understand it now in my life is like, no. The key is I pray really hard. In other words, I live in deep communion with God.
In point A.
In point A.
Yeah.
But point A is all I have. And then I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know where point B is.
Totally.
I'm just going to go where the Spirit of God leads me.
Yeah.
And really the key is in the present, right here, right now, I'm just going to commune as deeply and intimately with the Lord as possible. And if that's all I have, if there is no wonderful point B where we grow and it's this or whatever, then this is all I need.
Like, this is
this is
life.
More than enough.
This is it.
You know? And over time, I'm learning. I'm still learning it, but over time, I'm learning. Like, man, that's the sweet spot is to enjoy communion with God in the here and now.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's such a challenging thought because there is that determination that is wired into us, trained as leaders, as people who, you know, God has given a desire to be fruitful and multiply and to flourish and all of those things. But it reminded me listening to you that, you know, they said it seemed good to us and the Holy Spirit, you know, like they, like we prayed, we asked in Acts and they said, well, seems good.
Yeah.
And like, there's this guy, Jocko Willink, who's a former Navy SEAL and doesn't fit the archetype that I thought, but he had this thing where he said, everybody's guessing, you know, everyone is, we think everyone we work with like knows what they're doing and everyone who's on the stage knows what they're doing and everybody is, you know, knows where they're going and nobody does. We're all guessing.
Yeah, that's right.
And which makes sense with a God who's big and actually the one we're supposed to go to and rely on.
Yeah, that's so good.
When you think about kind of the but I tell you now of this journey, like there's this better is better, you know, or, you know, get better, do more, get there. You know, and you kind of framed it in a certain sense about awareness. But, you know, if you were thinking about sharing that there's hope for other people to not just feel stuck in trying to get to Z or to point B or to be present with their life. You know, what would you say, but I tell you now?
Yeah. You know, again, there's so much to say. I think what I would encourage folks to think about is to name the lie that a meaningful life is always found on the other side of getting the thing or becoming the thing.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way, you've come to believe you need to have or to be to experience a meaningful life.
Yeah.
And instead, learn the art of embracing the reality that a meaningful life is actually learning to most desire the thing that is already yours.
Yeah.
Which is God Himself, His love for you, and the people of God. And all of that is already yours. And that's it. Like, the most, you know, the people we look to as sages, right? They all say the same thing in their own way.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, I went on that journey and I had intense success and whatever. And you know my name and you read my books and my church is whatever, right? But the ones who make it through that gauntlet, they get to a place where in their own way, every single one of them say, actually, like real life, real joy, real meaning, it was already there. I didn't have to do X, Y, and Z to experience it or get it, you know, it's already there. And I think that's the key. And that's something I'm striving toward every day, is to like embrace that truth. A meaningful life is found in desiring most the thing that I already have.
Kind of, you know, where are you? Right here.
Yes.
Like right here.
Yeah.
Well right said. Present to, you know, where God already is and and with us in it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, any other thoughts, anything that you're just kind of drumming around?
Oh man, this is I could talk to you for hours, Tyler. I love you and your heart and your heart for the church and your heart for people, and I'm like really grateful that God has struck up this friendship and excited to see where it goes.
I was gonna ask you, where can people, you know, follow and learn more about what God's doing in your here and now? Like what you're doing, what you're up to.
Yeah. I have a little website that I don't keep up with very well, but there's at least links to things that I make, some writing and books and things like that. It's just J. Kim Thinks, and that's my handle on stuff.
Perfect. So awesome. Well, thanks for joining us on the But I Tell You podcast. What a gift to have you here, Jay.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Awesome.